When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show. Today, we'll be previewing Sunday's trip from west to east to face West Ham at the London Stadium. Also, we'll do a little bit of a look back at Saturday's defeat to Newcastle, but we're not going to dwell on it. In this podcast, one thing we're definitely going to do is answer lots of questions and the return of this little catch-on. We'll make sure we have plenty of time for that at the end of the show. Also, you'll hear an excerpt from Jack and Joe's brilliant chat that they did with football finance expert Kieran Maguire. The full thing's on the YouTube, but we'll play you an excerpt in the podcast today. I'm joined by Jack Collins. Hello.
Hello, Sammy. Hello, listeners. How are you doing?
Good, thanks, mate. And we'll look Peter's in Paris for the next couple of weeks because it's the Champions League, and he was great last week, so we drafted him in again. George Cooper, hello.
Hello, very much the poor man's P-Ruts. But yeah, no, I'm glad to be in.
It was obviously a really disappointing game on Saturday, Jack. George, you covered it brilliantly with the team on Sunday's pod. To be honest, I enjoyed Sunday's pod for the analysis of the Newcastle game, but mostly just enjoyed hearing about Ovas's terrible cruise to Paris.
It's so ludicrous. It's really made me laugh. The entire situation is just, it's completely and utterly nonsense.
It's like, you know, people win luxury, all expenses paid, but this is a no expenses paid.
No, this is, you'll have to pay expenses paid trip to Paris. Yeah, I enjoyed
sort
that.
To Paris.
Yeah, to Le Havre, and then a 2-hour train journey to Paris for where you get 4 hours.
Le Havre at home that weekend, you might get a Ligue 1 game.
My dad listened to it and told Ovas that he should go to a little French town called Honfleur, which is apparently just up the coast from Le Havre and is apparently lovely.
There you go.
So that was my dad's tip to Ovas.
That's the difference between your dad and I. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, you get to a Ligue 1 game, be really good. Like, Le Havre is struggling at the bottom of Ligue 1. That'd be lots of fun.
Yeah, my dad's like,
that'd be nice.
Yeah, he should have some Moule Marinier in Honfleur instead.
Yeah, fair, your dad's probably right.
He's got three options now, three solid options. And I definitely think going to Paris is the worst one. Listen back to Sunday's podcast. Honestly, it was, I was dying. Jack, let's look back at the Newcastle game quickly. I cannot get out of my head how similar it felt to last year's game against West Ham at home, which was a very similar time of year. We lost 1-0. We were stuck on 39 points.
Yeah.
Fulham played well for the majority of the game, but then lost out a bit of steam. And most people just shrugged their shoulders. Is shrugging your shoulders a fair response? We got a little bit of heat on the quick take from a couple of people like, why are you so passive about Fulham losing? It's more serious than that. But I came out of Saturday and I was a bit like, oh, it's not great. But also, it's just that point of the season where wins are bonuses, but ultimately, it's not a lot to fight for. And I'm very happy with that, but that is a consequence.
Yeah, I mean, I think the flip side of that is looking back at the last three results and thinking, well, if Fulham had picked up 7 points instead of one, where would we be in the table? And that's incredibly frustrating. And I imagine it's incredibly frustrating for Marco, because there was an opportunity there to push on and maybe be in that conversation for Europe. I'm not saying we would have got there, but be in that conversation till a little bit later in the season to show that there was a little bit more. There's still this top half finish. We know how much every place in the Premier League is worth. Those complacency shouldn't be setting in, but equally, I appreciate where you're coming from. My brother was livid for full time, and you know, I sort of marched off, and it was all a bit wild.
I saw.
Oh, I know you were with me, but it was, you know, I met you outside the stadium. I looked around, and I was like, "Where's Tom gone?" And he'd marched off in a bit of a huff. Now he went to Newcastle Uni, so I think it was a real kind of one to be like, "I'd like to get there." And I think there is an element of being like, you know, this Newcastle team at this point with that amount of injuries against a full strength Fulham at the Cottage, we should have been able to pull this out of the bag. I thought we played well first half. And I think that given the way that we performed, we deserved to go into the break one or two goals up. And at halftime, I remember talking to Dean and being like, we're going to lose this 1-0, aren't we? To be honest, I thought it'd be a worse goal. I thought it'd come off like Sean Longstaff's ass. I was convinced that it was going to, you know, just sort of bounce off Longstaff and go in or something. So the fact that it was a good strike from Bruno was something, I suppose. But yeah, it's hard to be madly angry about it, considering how good this season has been up to this point, and the fact that we are not being dragged into this relegation battle, the fact that we are, I think, pretty much safe, even if we lost every game for the rest of the season, which I don't think is going to happen. But it is frustrating in itself that we can't just seem to see off this end of the season, and we've allowed ourselves to slip into this now, what is now going to be a period of sort of shrug, as you say.
Yeah. I mean, I do think, George, that whilst there may be an element of, oh, it doesn't matter, I think Marco will be livid with how the past three games have panned out.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. And I think that it's, I don't know what it is that's caused this slump in our form when we have had everybody at our disposal. If anything, this is when you should be really hitting your stride in the season. But I think, I don't know. I can't put my finger on what's to blame. I don't know whether it is just the perhaps lack of motivation that's coming through the squad, because as you mentioned, there's nothing really to play for. But I mean, these are elite professional footballers. That shouldn't really be an issue. I wonder whether it's because we're fighting. We've been playing against teams who with the probably with the not including Newcastle particularly, but just have had that motivation, have had that edge, that it just has been a bit of a, you know, a recipe for some disappointing results. I imagine he will be pretty disappointed. I feel like there has been some games, in particular the Newcastle game, where I think the game was potentially lost with a throw of the dice from Marco Silva that didn't pay off. So I think there's an element of he'd be a little bit frustrated with himself as well as the side. But I mean, ultimately, it's not really much harm done. It's just a bit of a shame.
I enjoyed on the pod you did where you said that Marco threw the dice and they didn't even hit the table.
Yeah.
That was a perfect analogy of the situation. I've never heard someone say that. But it was good. Perfect.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
It didn't pay off. But I mean, that's why we love Marco. He's willing to take some risks. Sometimes they're brilliant and we're lauding his tactical genius. And then other times, doesn't quite hit the mark. It's just how it is to be a professional Premier League football manager.
In the words of C.S. Lewis, he's not a tame lion, is he? You know, he's not going to sit there and just watch it pan out. And yeah, sometimes it pays off, and sometimes it pays off in spectacular ways, and sometimes it doesn't. And it did feel like the weekend was one of those where it didn't. I think there is a slight frustration in the fact that obviously we get away with one, with the goal that's disallowed. And, you know, at the time I was like, I don't know what's happening. I got a text from a couple of group chats being like, so it's an elbow in the head. It's definitely a foul. It's going to be ruled off. I was like, okay, fair enough. Watched it back. I was like, oh, we've got away with that. I'm going to be absolutely spitting feathers if we had a goal disallowed for that, because I don't think that it makes any difference to I don't think it makes a difference to the flow of the ball.
I mean, he fouls him though.
Yeah. It's a foul, but I don't think it makes any difference to the goal.
No, but it means Bassi's taken out of the equation and can't defend.
I don't think he's getting there. But like,
I don't know, I disagree.
Yeah, I don't think that matters. A bit similar to the Kilman goal where everyone's like saying that that's that should be onside. I'm like, it doesn't matter if he's blocking his line of vision or not. He's in his way.
Yeah, and, I don't know. I felt sorry for Wolves as well. So maybe there's something in that. But anyway, like, we got the warning sign. We got away with it. Whether you think it's fair or not, and that's fine. We got away with it. And then we just completely allowed them to go up the other end and do the same thing again. It was like, what? And I think that's what's frustrating about it. You know, you get that moment of catharsis when the away end goes absolutely ballistic. They get quietened down by the VAR. The celebrations go around when the goal gets ruled off. And then 2 minutes later, the away end goes ballistic again. It's like, have a bit of, you know, nous and, you know, just cohesiveness in that moment. Just be like, okay, whoa, that was close.
Yeah.
Let's not do that again. None of it.
Well, maybe in those moments, Bert Lennonis needs to go down and have a little fake injury. We can have a little team talk. We should be learning.
Little tea break.
We should learn. We're not cynical enough.
I want Bert Leno going down in the 23rd minute every game from now on. If they can do it, why can't we?
Well, yeah, in certain situations. I do think we lack a little bit of cynicality at times.
I thought we were quite good at that.
When was the last shithousing Fulham team?
I thought this one was quite good at it. Like when we're winning and stuff,
we were quite good at it in the championship. Yeah,
that was just Steph Johansson.
Bring back Steph Joe as a coach. Make him assistant manager next year. Then we'll be all right.
Let him weed out opportunities and marginal gains that we can eke out. Let's look ahead to West Ham on Sunday.
Do we have to?
We do indeed. We're going to West Ham. I don't know why. I think possibly when you look at the timing of their Europa League game, this feels like almost the best time to try and face. They've got to go away.
We said that about Newcastle.
Well, did we?
Good time to play Newcastle with their injuries and out of form and back to the cottage.
Okay, but Jack, them going to Bayer Leverkusen on Thursday is quite a big bonus for us. That's the toughest game of West Ham season by a mile. And they will be putting all their eggs in that basket. Fulham on Sunday is going to be a massive afterthought for them.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be. And they are going to need to pull something pretty spectacular out of the bag if they are going to win in Leverkusen. But even to stay in that tie, so much of that is, yes, okay, obviously take what you can get. And I say this, and if they win 4-0 on Thursday night now, then, you know, be on my head. But, you know, what West Ham will want from that tie is to be in it by the time it comes back to the London Stadium, so they can try and build that atmosphere that got them through games like the Sevilla game in the Europa League a few years back. They need that atmosphere and they need to be in it. And so it does create quite a lot of pressure in terms of how they're going to deal with that situation. Leverkusen are obviously unbelievable at the moment, and this unbeaten streak has been sensational. They have had wobbles in this competition, and so it's going to be something that I imagine West Ham will look to try and take advantage of. But it remains the case that West Ham, you know, considering where they are in the league and considering how tight that is, are going to have to try and balance this war on two fronts, if you will, because they're going to, you know, whilst they will look at that Leverkusen game and go, yeah, an opportunity to go head-to-head against one of the best sides in Europe and see what we can do, they are also still in that hunt for European football in the Premier League. And so trying to make sure that balance is there is going to be a tricky job, considering that Moyes doesn't have a full-strength squad at his disposal.
Yeah, I mean, Jared Bowen, he's a doubt for the Leverkusen game. We don't know if he's going to be around for Sunday, but one way or another, he's not going to be in action. And this is an interesting one. The only thing that I guess will give West Ham some motivation is what happened earlier in the season, because I think West Ham can pretty comfortably say they had their worst performance of the season.
They had flu.
At Craven Cottage.
Yeah. Oh yeah, drops an absolute stinker.
They had flu.
Yeah.
That came out 3 days later. It was like, no one spoke about this before the game. Afterwards, it was like, it turns out the whole camp had flu. Oh, does it now? Yeah. All right, cool.
Moyes not think to mention that in the pre-game presser. Yeah. No, you're going to keep that one under my hat.
Just in case we need it.
We've had a flu outbreak.
Sarnia gate all over again.
They'll be wanting to rectify. They'll be wanting to put it right for their fans. But I mean, it's Fulham at... I keep trying to call it Upton Park, but it's Fulham at the London Stadium. Something awful will happen. We'll get three players sent off. I don't know, they'll be struck by lightning or something.
They might score a few goals with their hand again.
Yeah. It's just a bogey ground for us. We never, ever seem to do well there. I'm not all that hopeful, to be honest. I know what you're saying. I take into account we've got a very, very difficult trip to Germany, but we're not playing well. So it's very hard to, at the moment, go into matches and expect anything from Fulham just because we're really not in form.
I'm not that hopeful either, which is why I think we might win. Because the last three games I've gone in been like, yeah, I reckon we'll probably win this one. And we've obviously got 1 point from nine. I think we're going to get absolutely nothing here, which means we'll probably win.
We struggle against teams as well that favour games that aren't particularly open. They're quite happy to sit back and they don't have that intense sort of a pressing game. So and we just do tend to struggle to against teams like that. And David Moyes' teams do set up incredibly well organised, sort of.
What the good thing that we did against West Ham early in the season is that we got early goals. And from there, you may be able to give the caveat that West Ham were apparently ill, but Fulham really took a strong hold of that game and West Ham had no answer to it. That's kind of, I think, what we need to do here is start fast. And I feel like in the last few games, we didn't start fast against Sheffield United, we didn't start fast against Forest. We actually did start fast against Newcastle. We just need to be a little bit more clinical.
Yeah, we probably just, like, I think we generally probably deserve something out of the Newcastle game. It's worth pointing out that I don't think that if you, on the balance of that 90
minutes. It should have been a 0-0 draw.
On the balance of that 90 minutes, I think it probably should have been 1-1.
Yeah.
Right? I think Fulham probably should have taken one of their chances. I think we deserved at least a point out of that game. We didn't get one, and that's our own fault in so many ways with that profligacy in front of goal. I love that word. But. It is one of those things that you now go, okay, can you now take that anger and frustration into the next game and start quickly? I think you're right. If Fulham go behind here, I can't see any way of us pulling things back, but hey.
Yeah, especially if we go behind. If we go behind, it's Kirtland's. You might as well do a Don Betts and leave.
And then we'll win 3-1. Yeah. That's how it goes.
I mean, Jack, I look at this West Ham team. I mean, the front four is just so good. Kudus, Ward-Prowse, Paqueta, potentially no Bowen, but you just put Mikel Antonio in there instead.
Yeah, they're not quite the same, but yeah.
No, okay. But at the back, though, is where Alvarez, fantastic player, but I do look at their defence and think, and again, we said this about Newcastle, but Fulham should be able to get some joy out of some of those players.
Yeah, on paper, yes. And also, I suppose the caveat to that is how many of those players play 90 minutes on Thursday and then can't play 90 minutes on Sunday? Where are the eggs going in the basket? To be honest, if I was West Ham, I would probably... they're not going to do this because it's a quarter final of European competition, but I'd be tempted to rest my players for Sunday.
Really?
I think so. I don't think they're going to beat Leverkusen over two legs. I do think they have more than a chance of getting European football in a Premier League sense.
That is such an interesting angle.
For what it's worth, they won't do that. But I just don't see a world where West Ham beat Leverkusen over two legs in the form that Leverkusen are in.
Yeah, but surely a bird in one hand is worth two in the bush. Is that the right saying for this situation? Yeah. Like,
I do think Liverpool are going to win the Europa League. I don't think West Ham are going to win the Europa League. So that's the only... As we found out, coming second in the Europa League gets you absolutely sod all the year afterwards. Getting to the final and losing gets you nothing. Getting in again gives you European competition and another run.
I don't know. We've dined out on getting second for 14 years.
No, I know,
years.
But no, 100%. And that was, but it didn't get us anything in terms of playing in Europe the next year.
No.
So, like, if they want to continue, like, if West Ham go on a run and they go get to the Europa League final, which they've done before, obviously, or they won the Conference League last year, they knocked out the semi-finals. I apologise, they haven't got to the Europa League final, but... You know, this is now a fan base who are expecting European football on a regular basis. If you offer a West Ham fan a win here and a loss in the semi-finals, okay, they beat Leverkusen over two legs, let's say, they lose in the semi-finals, or they get seventh and are in Europe again next season, which one are they taking?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is... They will go for it, though. Like, you'd just be mad. It's
No, I agree with you. I'm just saying, if I was Moyes, I'd have a think about it.
Yeah, but they're not going to. Because it's a quarterfinal. It's a quarterfinal. It's a quarterfinal. Whatever competition. It's the Carling Cup.
Moyes doesn't care because he's not going to be there next year.
Well, yeah.
So.
Honestly, them as a club, just... I have no idea what's going to...
Perplex me.
Like, how they can be seventh and have the, you know, the runs in Europe and yet still just unanimously be seemingly unhappy with the way things are going. Also, I have no idea how they're seventh. as well. In my mind, West Ham have constantly been like, sort of like, I don't know, ninth, between ninth and 12th.
This is what's frustrating. I think this is what's frustrating about this Fulham season, right? And look, I've promised I wouldn't be negative, but in some ways, you look at West Ham and you're thinking, maybe it's just the reaction and the overreaction sometimes from fans. You're thinking they must be having a relatively bad season. You look at Chelsea and you must be thinking they must be having a really relatively bad season. And they are to standard. But also we're still behind both of these teams. I'm like, oh, we're having a good season. Like, how are we still behind these two? But where the world are.
But also, I think when you think about West Ham and Fulham, the only difference is that they started like a train and we didn't. It's been fairly similar since those starts.
Yeah.
They had 10 points from their opening four games and we were milling around on four.
Oh yeah, there you go.
So I genuinely think that is about what the difference is that, and yeah, because in my mind, I don't think West Ham's season has been that much better than what they did last year, and they were in relegation trouble for the majority of it. But obviously,
that's not the facts of the matter,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm literally looking at a league table right now, and they are in seventh. Jack, a little trip to the London Stadium.
Yeah, my favourite place.
Okay, here's a bit of a controversial opinion. I know that the ground itself, and like if you're in that top tier, you are miles from the pitch. A day out to Stratford, I don't hate it.
It's a bit like, for me, and this is a really good comparison, I think. It's a bit like going to Reading, right? On paper, I live in Ealing, right? On paper, getting to Reading or Stratford on the Lizzie line is really easy. And then it's ages to the stadium, for one. Takes like forever to get from Stratford to the London Stadium.
It's not like a 10-minute walk in the sunshine.
It's absolutely packed. There's nowhere good to drink on the way.
Also, you got to go through that airport security beforehand, which you can get caught up in for what feels like an eternity.
Well, you just need to go on the Jubilee line the right way.
Yeah. Forgot about that, yeah.
It's just all, I don't know.
Do you remember that?
On paper, it's a really easy, nice away trip, but it's impossible to get on the train back afterwards.
Or just stick around for a pint.
There's nowhere good.
There's loads of places near the canal and the docks and all of that.
That's the wrong way for the Lizzie line.
Well, I just think I get the stadium's a bit crap, but I just think, especially if it's all right weather.
It's quite easy to get a pint in the stadium, actually. Give them that.
Yeah.
They can have that.
I know. I just feel like everyone, like, look, it's not Upton Park. They sold their soul. I get all of that and I agree with it. But as an away fan, I think it's reasonably easy to get to. And there are some places to drink around it. And yes, that crush at Stratford afterwards is a bit crap. Hang around, have a pint, let it die down.
There he goes.
It's not the worst.
Mr. East London, Sammy James.
It's like
the only time I venture over there.
Yeah,
all
East
year.
London, Sammy.
it's got the feel of it looks, and it's got the capacity of like a mega arena, but it's like, it's, and obviously it was built for the Olympics, but it's like somebody said, can we build a huge, huge ground on a very, very tight budget? That's what it feels like. It feels concrete. It feels a bit soulless. I don't think it's a particularly nice place to watch football.
It's London's equivalent of Dubai. It looks nice on paper, but actually when you get there, everything's crap and expensive.
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison. But occasionally, Dubai,
no,
if you had to go
there
for
is
a couple...
no situation in the world where someone was like, do you want to go to Dubai? I would say yes.
What, you wouldn't take 4 days winter sun, just easy, all paid for?
No, because you can't walk anywhere in Dubai.
You just get a taxi.
No, why would I, like, when I go somewhere, I want to experience it, walk around, like, feel the culture, but it's, like, all made up, so it's not real. So, like, I don't know, it's a bit the same. Stratford, it's not real, it doesn't exist, it's made up.
Yeah, but it's not my first choice of where I'd go on holiday, but ultimately for a day or two, it's not a dilemma.
I mean, none of it. I'd rather be at the G-Tech and I say something.
Fair enough. I mean, the G-Tech also has been done quite nicely as well.
G-Tech has good pubs around it. It's walkable. Like
the Medeski,
I
get. Medeski, you get to Reading and then you're like, great, I'm in Reading. Oh, wait, now I need a bus.
I could take two buses and a line bike together.
Yeah.
The Medeski is the worst place on earth. But, I mean, I'm still, yeah, in some ways, I hope it survives because I hope the football club doesn't go under.
Well. Anyway.
There you go. Anyway, that's why Stratford's like Dubai and Reading.
George, just because we referenced the story earlier, can you tell people why you went the wrong way on the Jubilee? Because it's still one of my favourite things ever.
So I both mine and Sammy's tickets to go to West Ham. Was this last year?
Last year.
It was the handball game, wasn't it? And so autopilot, get to Jubilee Line from Waterloo. Absolutely fine. Da-da-da-da-da. For full context, I used to live in Finchley Road, so I think just by force of habit I went the opposite direction on the Jubilee line and ended up.
I thought it was because you saw westbound and you thought it was called West Ham, and then your brain that was what you said at the time.
I know. That very well could have been the case. Yeah, I imagine I was.
Which is one of my favourite things that you've ever come up with.
The West Ham train
westbound. That makes sense. No,
it does make sense. To be fair.
Yeah.
Credit where it's due.
Yeah.
But I got a ridiculous amount along the... I had so much time on my hands as well. I was like, this would be great. I've got time for plenty of beers before.
Dolly's Hill.
I was so far the other way before. And then obviously you have to go fully back. So
there's no car across.
It took me hours. Yeah, it was very, very stupid of me.
We just about got in time to see Andres Pereira's absolute bullet. So it all worked out.
I think we just
end.
Made kickoff, didn't we? It was really tight though. I remember
leaving Sammy outside, being like, "Sorry, mate, I'm going in."
Yeah, I was sprinting from the station trying to get to the ground. I just
that,
see
that
like,
security.
Four missed calls from Sammy James. I was like, no. And then I got caught up in the airport security to get in there before. It was very stressful.
All right.
The game didn't make me feel much better either.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I've rushed for this.
Yeah, well, obviously, it all went Pete Tong. Jack, just quickly, from a Fulham perspective, any changes that you'd make for Sunday?
Good question. I think the back four, probably back five, stays the same.
Yeah, it's pretty solid now, isn't it? There's not much point changing it.
It was nice to see Sasha Lukic continue the theory that he's absolutely and utterly pointless off the bench at the weekend. So that was good.
He might be useful in that's one.
I might start Sasha here. I know there'd be a lot of people saying I'd start Harrison Reed. I think I might start Sasha and Polina together here, especially given the physicality of what West Ham bring to the table. You know, you obviously think about Suchek and Alvarez from set pieces, from dead balls, and the ability of James Ward-Prowse from those situations. I think I'd be tempted to play both of them and try and match up to that physicality at dead ball situations. Might bring Harry Wilson back in.
What, for Iwobi?
Yeah. I don't know.
Wilson's not been
really adding. Wilson hasn't been very good recently.
But you stuck him on the left. Stick him on the right.
Yeah, when he came out. That was the most frustrating, actually, you know, just to touch back on the Newcastle game. The thing that most frustrated me for the entire game was that we got Emil Kraft booked really early on. And then we refused to run at him for the rest of the game and focused all our attacks down the other side. And then we brought Adama Traore on and we're like, nah, we'll leave him alone. We won't run at Kraft, a player on a booking, who's not very good and part of Newcastle's, you know, he's not part of Newcastle's first team squad. And we just left him alone for the next 80 minutes. One of the most bizarre things I've seen in a long, long time. And then we played Harry Wilson on the wrong side. No, not for me, Clive, I'll be honest.
Yeah, George, I think my one change would be maybe Lukic for Kearney. I think you could bring in someone on the right, Deckard over Reed, Wilson for Iwobi. But I also think starting with Iwobi, like... it's just a bit much for muchness, isn't it, really?
Also, Rodrigo should still start, obviously. But if he has as ineffective a game as he did on Saturday, he should be pulled earlier. Like, there was a moment there, and I felt a bit sorry for Breuer again, because he obviously came on with Raul, and neither of them knew what they were doing then.
Breuer had a very near moment where I thought he was going to waltz through the entire...
Yeah, but
defense.
I just think if you're going to do that, give him a moment to actually play on his own up top. And look, Muniz isn't going to be effective every game. It's part of him being young. It's fine. It's not a problem. But when he's not being effective, I think it's time to, you know, you just got to pull him and make sure that he's, you know, given that rest period as well as anything else. Just take him out of the line of fire for a bit. You have someone there that you can use. He's available. He's a different style of striker in some ways. Give him a go.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we'll take a break there. Afterwards, we're going to get into Jack and Joe's interview with football finance expert Kieran Maguire.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Part two of the Fulhamish podcast, Sammy here with Jack and Coots. Before we get into Jack and Joe's chat with Kieran, just a quick thank you to Green King Sport for sponsoring the Thursday Club this season. Green King Sport pubs are where you can watch every single televised sporting match this season. Obviously, there's some big football games this weekend. Liverpool and Arsenal both playing on Sunday on Sky. Obviously, Liverpool's at the same time as West Ham Fulham, which isn't on the box as per usual. There's also Bournemouth Man United, 5:30 on Saturday. Newcastle Spurs is the early game. And of course, 4 p.m, it's the Grand National at Aintree. So if you want to go watch the horses do their thing, then head there. And the Masters this weekend as well. It's a big old weekend of sport. Best place to watch it is at a Green King Sport pub. And if you download the Green King Sport app, you can get 10% off your drinks while you're there. We're going to do questions and this will catch on in a moment. But first, we want to play you a little excerpt from Jack and Joe's show on YouTube this week. They spoke to football finance expert Kieran Maguire, and we thought you might like to hear a little bit of it here on the podcast.
I think that's one thing that concerns me is... And you might have seen this, I know you referenced the Fulham season ticket prices, but one of the main frustrations as fans at the moment is the price of tickets at Fulham. It's becoming a massive cause of conflict between the Supporters Trust, in my opinion, very rightfully, and the club. And the dialogue's almost died. The relationship's really gone downhill. We haven't had the prices for next season yet. But when I'm reading through these figures and I'm seeing record revenue, great. But in terms of what made that match day income, including ticket prices, only accounting for, you know, roughly 10%. So my question really is, are these ticket prices even close to being necessary? Because from my perspective as a fan, I'm seeing these numbers and I'm almost seeing it as a small drop in a massive pond and our money being taken almost unnecessarily. And I just wanted to get your steer on it because it's something that's happening at a lot of clubs. It's not just Fulham, but we've certainly seen some of the biggest hikes in the last couple of years.
Well, that's right. I mean, Fulham's matchday income increased by 122% compared to 21-22. Now, part of that was a function of being in the Premier League compared to being in the Championship. If we go back to previous seasons, it's still substantially more. It's still more than 20% more than Fulham have ever earned in the Premier League. Is it a necessity? Well, we then have to come back to what is the purpose, what is the objective of Fulham Football Leisure Limited to its shareholders. If it's there to maximise profits, what the owners will say is, well, hold on, we put up prices. We sold out every ticket. Let's put up prices again until we stop selling out every ticket. And they will point out that Fulham made £15 million from matchday revenue. So that works out as around about £750,000 a match. Spurs are getting around about £6 million a match. So
they all
look at it through those eyes and go, well, hold on, you know, we're only getting, you know, just over more than 10% of the money that Spurs are. We need to address that issue. And the downside is that I think Fulham fans get a rough press because the perception, and for the sake of transparency, people don't know me, I'm a Brighton fan. So therefore, you know, what do people think of Brighton? They think everybody's middle class. They think everybody's, you know, there with a labradoodle and a latte and eating quinoa. I work for the local food bank. I know that Brighton's got one of the highest risks of drug addiction in the country. It's got one of the highest rates of suicide in the country and so on. And yeah, there are some people there that have got wealth. There are people in Fulham that have got wealth. There's also people in Newcastle who have got wealth, but Newcastle is always personified as a working class enclave and so on. So the perception that the club can put up the prices and all the fans can easily absorb it, I think is not correct. From the club's point of view, and I know this sounds cynical, we are now entering football 2.0 in the sense that owners don't want season ticket holders because you can make more money from selling tickets to tourists, especially if you're playing one of the other big London clubs, if you're playing Manchester United or Manchester City or even Newcastle or Villa or Liverpool or Everton. Yeah, they'll quite happily sell 5,000 or 10,000 tickets if you can't, and they'll sell them at sky high prices. London is incredibly attractive to the tourist market, and people who come to visit the capital, they'd love to go back and say, "Oh yeah, we've been to see a Premier League football match," and this is a part of. Yeah, I'm sounding like an economic lecturer here. This is part of the globalization of the game and the globalization of the world in terms of many products and services that we have, and people are prepared to pay. The Premier League is a fantastically successful product, and there's an awful lot of people that want to see it, but they're not necessarily the same people that, if you're not in the Premier League, would say Rotherham on a Tuesday night, well, you're a Fulham fan, you're there because you go to see Fulham play. Whereas yeah. They just want to see the event, the entertainment. They just want to have the memento. And I'm as guilty as this as anybody else when I go abroad. So I'm lucky that I get the chance to work in the States. And yeah, I'll go and see an NBA game. Mm. I'll go and see an NFL game and so on. And I'll pay a stupid price. And it won't particularly bother me because it's a one-off event. Mm. But for you guys, as season ticket holders, it's far more than that. First of all, it's a lifelong contract that you've got between yourself and Fulham Football Club, because you know that you're never going to lose that love for Fulham. Mm. Just like I'm never going to stop supporting Brighton. If Todd Bowley phones you up and says, "Hi guys, I understand that Fulham have just put up their prices by 20% for season tickets for next season. Here's a deal. I'm going to offer you a Chelsea season ticket for £50 for the next 5 years."
I'm saying no. I'm hanging up.
You're
the phone.
No?
I'm hanging up the phone.
Yeah, exactly.
The Riverside stand has been an issue because it hasn't finished yet. I mean, it's up. It's all ready to go. The interior isn't finished. There are fans sitting in there in the lower tier and parts of the upper tier. I'm now guessing that once it finally does open, I think it's December this year, they said they were going to open it. That's going to massively enhance the revenue, match day revenue of the club. On a match day basis. But do you think that the delay in it opening has sort of triggered the club to put these prices up so much because they're basically making up for all the empty seats?
It depends upon the big picture of the owner. Mm. If I look at these numbers in front of me, how much has he put into the club? Well, in 2019, 49 million, the following season 77, then 151, then 116, then he's putting in £1.5 million a week for the last 4 or 5 years. So here we go. I need to get some of this back at some point. but I think probably similar to you, with match day revenue bringing in less than 10%, even if you stick up prices, it's not going to move the dial that significantly. Manchester United put up their prices and they got an extra £25 million last year compared to 2022. So you can see if he puts up prices and it brings in another £2 million, that's less than the difference between finishing 10th and 11th in the Premier League. Mm. And what's it also done? Are we allowed to swear in this show?
Yeah.
Okay. Do it.
It's pissed off a lot of fans.
Yep.
So you've got very little extra money coming back in, and you've got 15,000 Fulham regulars who are season ticket holders are going, "Well, you're a billionaire. You've not been having to worry about how you're going to go and pay the gas bill or the car taxes due at the end of this month," or go, I've forgotten all about that. That means I can't do X and I can't do Y and I might have to go missing a couple of matches and so on. I think there is a disconnect between owners and fans when it comes to these. At the same time, should football be exempt from the rest of society? Yeah, when I go to the pub, the price of a drink's gone up. When I go to a restaurant, the price of the food's gone up. But when I go and buy my mobile phone contract, that's gone up each year. Mm. Should football clubs be exempt? Do we hold football clubs to a different set of moral and ethical and economic rules than everything else in our lives? Because when the price of petrol has gone up about 15p a litre in the last month or so, what have I done? I've had a bit of a moan and then forgotten about it.
Yeah.
But if it's football, I've a bit of a moan and I never forget about it.
Amazing. Thanks to Kieran for joining Jack and Joe on the show this week. Make sure, if you want to watch the full thing, and honestly, it's a brilliant watch. From a Fulham's perspective, yes, but also just a little bit of a crash course in everything kind of football finance. Go to YouTube. It's the top of the YouTube feed right now. Subscribe while you're there. We've been building the YouTube channel this season. We're really proud of it. So please do check it out for the full interview. We'll take another break there afterwards. We'll do some questions and then this will catch on. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy here with Jack and Coops. As promised, lots of times to get through the bulging inbox that I have. If you ever want to send an email to us, hello@fulhamish.co.uk. We promise a response time on the pod of about 3 months.
This is actually questions from the last time we played. Yeah.
This is, we're just about getting through to some questions about whether Mitro will stay with us next year.
Do you think we'll win the Europa League final? Yeah.
And a couple of people are asking if Saudi Arabia might pose a problem in the summer transfer window. No, Kevin Hudson sent this one on April the 9th. This is from yesterday. See, I'm not so bad. Kevin says, "Dear all, great podcast. I want to ask the panel what they think about two potential positional changes in our team. Firstly, we can't fault the enthusiasm, work rate and delivery of Andreas Pereira. However, it's one position we need to improve to reach the next level due to his lack of goals and assists other than from set pieces. As a former semi-pro level coach, I have often wondered why he hasn't been played deeper in midfield alongside Polina. When frustrated, he always drops deep anyway, leaving a gap further forward. I could see a similar switch with Kenny Tete, undoubtedly one of our best one-on-one defenders, apart from Forest away, but Castagne has been very consistent in his levels, limiting Kenny's appearances. However, surely with his experience and defensive qualities, he could be tried as our right-sided centre-back next season, replacing Wantaway Tosin. He's good in the air, would free up money to spend elsewhere in the squad. What do the panel think?" And this is from, I love this, Kevin Hudson, part of the Abergavenny Supporters Club in Wales, brackets, "There's three of us."
You know what? That's two more than I expected there to be. So shouts out Abergavenny.
Three more than I expected. Andreas Pereira first. Deeper in midfield.
It's been tried before, is what I would say first. It's not the first time that this has been mooted and might not have been given that much scope at Fulham, but it's definitely something that Andreas has worked with at other clubs in his career, playing a little bit deeper. I think at times he was played as a defensive midfielder, especially when he went over to Lazio. But it's never really come off. And I think it's a little bit to do with his positional sense. The reason I don't think Marco likes it is because Andreas leads the press, even with Muniz in there. It becomes a 4-4-2 and he basically starts it and kicks into that zone. It's why Marco hasn't really played Tom Kearney there, I don't think, because you lose that ability to push out from the front if you don't have someone who has Andreas's work rate in there. Now, that's not to say it's irreplaceable, but I think that playing him deeper increases your risk of him jumping into a press or a trigger that then leaves Polina exposed in a way that maybe it doesn't. The only thing I could see it working, we've kind of discussed this a little bit before, is if you played Polina with Iwobi and Pereira each side of him and then allowed one of them to go and the other to stay, and they'd have to learn how to play it together. But I think that's the only way you could maybe make that work in a kind of rotational sense.
And George, Kenny Tete, right centre-back, feels like quite a jump. I mean, Calvin Bassey was a left-back and he's now our left centre-back, but
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think Tete is, he's very physical. He's a very strong player. So I could see it working from that side, but I don't know. He just feels a little bit too dynamic to be. And I mean, like preseason friendlies could give it a spin, but I certainly would not want to be seeing it in any of our remaining six games. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm all for it. I don't see any reason why it couldn't work. What do you reckon?
I think he might be a bit small. That sounds a bit ridiculous, but I think he might be a little bit small. And
they said that about Cannavaro, didn't they?
Yeah, they did say that about Cannavaro, and look what happened when he came to the cottage. I think actually the one that would work really nicely for Kenny is playing right centre back in a back three.
Yes.
I actually think that position would be a really nicely cut out for him. I'd be a little bit wary of playing him in a central role in a two. I can't really explain why.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, what element of his game would lead you to, obviously there's the positioning, which you need to learn, and just the general, you know, how to become an accomplished centre-back. But on paper, I think he's got everything that you would want of a centre-back. I don't know, is his passing ability from the back?
It screams a bit Dennis Odoi in there for me. And I've got to say that even then, and even when that was working, it didn't sit right with me. I don't know why.
Never was 100%.
It never was something that I was like, I'm really, really confident in this. And it screams similar. I just think that there's such different roles. And you know, the way that Fulham use their fullbacks and the way that we asked, look, we sat here and spoke about Kenny against Nottingham Forest. And look, we can all say that's a one-off and that's fine. And I'm not sitting here being like, that's now his level. But that ability, you know, and the reason he was pushed up so high and was struggling to get back into those areas is because it's what Marcus Silva demands of his fullbacks. I just don't know if that positional switch necessarily transitions as well as some others. Weirdly, the one that seems to work quite nicely is right back in central midfield, like as a defensive midfielder. That I could maybe get on board with. But again, it would involve, you know, a kind of directness of pass that maybe isn't quite so eminent in Kenny's game right now. So we'll see.
This one from Charles Maloney is on the topic of Pereira. A few Pereira questions today. Charles says, "Dear Fulhamish, long-time listener, first-time emailer. My question is, when Pereira is so pivotal to our press, why does Silva persist with taking him off at 70 minutes nearly every match? He's then gone through the matches in 2024 where Pereira has been taken off. And it is interesting that there's been quite a few goals conceded in that time. We've got the Burnley game where Davidetro Defana scored, the Wolves game, Pereira comes off, Fulham concede the second, obviously the Newcastle game. The only one that Charles said where actually the Pereira substitution kind of worked was Sheffield United, where Decad Overreed came on and actually scored. It's been pretty much every game that he's come off. Burnley, Bournemouth, Villa, United, Brighton, Wolves, Spurs, Sheffield United, Forest, Newcastle. It's been pretty much every single game where Pereira has been subbed.
I think he's just knackered.
But he's playing one game a week, and I think you guys said on the Sunday
He legs it around for 70 minutes.
He's also got incredible stamina. I don't think you've ever thought he's blowing.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe it's an element of protecting him because he is so crucial to the way that the Silver side plays that, you know, an injury to Pereira I think would be pretty devastating for Fulham. And I know there's a lot of people that don't like him, but I think that it would be a pretty crucial one in terms of how we set up. The Bobby Decord Overreed point there is interesting because I think Bobby coming into that role actually does work a little bit because he pushes so hard and he's able to do some of the same things in terms of work rate and pressing that Pereira does. I actually think that when Bobby comes on for him, the drop-off isn't quite as drastic. But I think when he comes off, there is a drop-off, definitely. And I don't know what the answer is. I assume it's to do with trying to protect him and make sure that he's, you know, ready to go again from the off for the next game. I can't really think of any other reason.
You talk about people that don't like Pereira. I think our next emailer definitely falls into that camp. Louis Meeling, yeah. He says, "Hi guys, just wanted to horn in on the Pereira question. I've seen a lot of people saying that Pereira is central to the way we play, or he brings creativity over the course of the season. And I honestly think he's been our weakest starter this year, and I can't see past how poor he has been generally and gotten away with it. I'm going to paraphrase a lot of the email, but I think a lot of it comes down to his output. He said, yes, he's had a decent amount of Premier League assists, 7, but these often come on the break or from corners, which he takes about 90% of. And for a number 10, one fluke goal this season, it just isn't good enough. Seeing the gap between Pereira and a player like Morgan Gibbs-White has really made me feel that investing in a number 10 in the summer is absolutely imperative. On that note, anyone at Fulhamish, anyone that Fulhamish has in mind, I wondered if he was meaning, as like, I don't know if you've seen us play football, but I don't know.
Yeah. I don't, my stamina's not quite as good.
Anyone that Fulhamish has in mind as a player we should be looking into. Sorry for the rant from Lou.
I don't have anyone off the top of my head. There are players out there who thrive in these roles, but it would take some research and a little bit of digging to really get into it. I completely appreciate the concerns, and I think that's fine. But I do think it's worth noting that drop off that goes back to that previous email, that when he comes off, Fulham get worse. I don't think that's a coincidence. So it comes down to what Marco wants from his 10, right? And if he wants a player in there who is incredibly creative, a Morgan Gibbs-White, you know, who can make things happen, can score goals, can assist, but actually his work rate isn't great, and who doesn't, you know, play in the same way that Pereira does, especially off the ball, then that's a different question. But that involves changing the setup and the system and relying more on other players. It's not impossible, but it's not really what we've seen from Marco Silva's sides in the Premiership, or Premier League, I should say. So, yeah, it's a kind of balancing act and it seems weird to suggest that a player who is playing the kind of most heralded creative position on the pitch is actually being used for his out-of-possession stuff rather than his in-possession stuff. But I think that that's testament to just the way that Silva wants his sides to play, whereas more of Fulham's attack comes down through the fullbacks and into those kind of wide areas than perhaps does through the player you traditionally think was the player who created all the things for the team.
Yeah, I mean, I had a look back at some of his stats, and 7 assists, I think, is a good return.
It's a fair point from Louis that a lot of them come from set pieces. I don't think on the break is a reason to rule them out, though. I didn't think about that. I was like, that seems like a perfectly reasonable way to get an assist.
Not that many come. I think it's maybe only 2 or 3 have come from set piece, which I guess you're bordering on 50%. But I still, like, I watched back, like, you know, I think it was the West Ham game. Oh, no, it was the Forest game where he got 3 of the assists he got the hat-trick of assists in a game. I do think the one goal out return isn't good enough. I'm sure he knows that, though. Moving on from Andreas Pereira, I'm coming to you on this one, George. Sam Purcell says, hi, Fulhamish, long-time listener, first-time mailing. Nah, not really, but thought it was obligatory. do you think we can attribute the absence of Mitrovic, sorry, we've gone here, with our poor performances on the road at all this season? As he's so unpopular now, I think everyone has forgotten his contributions to the club. Beyond having a decent return, he was a total pain in the ass for opposition. He was good at corners, and his antics would wind up home ends. Overall, he did have an aura and was a bit of a warrior, which is important away. Marco and the team have done amazingly well to react, and we've all moved on. But I can't help we feel a lack of leadership and necessary aggression to get some wins on the road. And that's cheers from Sam. I actually think this is a very good point.
Yeah, and it's 100% accurate and totally right. When Mitrovic left, and that's part of the reason why collectively we were so heartbroken, is that we lost our talisman. We lost that player who would be stamping on metatarsals and cupping his ears to the away ends, and perhaps most importantly, when playing away, would take the one chance that would fall our way and then just rile everyone up. And I don't think there's any coincidence between him leaving and our home away form taking a dip. I'm kind of surprised that it's the first time I've really heard that direct connection made, but I think Sam absolutely has a point. And who is filling that role for us now?
There was something about Mitrovic at away games, particularly whenever you went, he just, people feared.
Put the crowd on edge as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Fulham are a lesser fearful side with him. You know, there's plenty great about Muniz, and his personality, I think, has started to come through a little bit in recent weeks. There's some brilliant interviews with him. But like, that happy, smiley guy doesn't terrify anybody. Mm. You know, he's great. And it doesn't mean that they should be less scared of him. But I don't think it quietens the crowd down the same way that, you know, a hulking, lumbering big Serb who's going to head in two corners does. Because it's just a different type
Mitrovic
of
Mitrovic sometimes walks on the pitch and he was going to score. There was never forget Southampton away last year.
Yeah.
Mitrovic was always going to score in that game, and there was just absolutely no doubt.
Yeah, there's nothing they could do about it.
He's the sort of player that when the home fans are looking at their programmes, they're like, oh, Mitrovic, he's quite handy. He's quite handy. I could see him getting a goal against us, and then more often than not, he did. Yeah, we miss him. Yeah. God football fish is not striking the same fear into the this Muniz. He's not striking the same fear.
If you haven't seen Rodrigo Muniz's interview with Football Focus,
it's so good.
It's on the BBC Football website. It's very, very good.
His bit about going to Birmingham Safari is amongst my favourite things.
The best bit is when asked what his favourite part about living in London is, and he responded with Madame Tussauds. Which for American listeners, I'm sure, I don't know whether they got Madame Tussauds in America, but it's a waxworks museum. Yeah, where they've got a celebrity.
I think if you were coming to London and you were like, what things must I do? I've got a week. I honestly think like Madame Tussauds is getting towards day 9, 10 of like things that you should do.
Lucy lived opposite pretty much, or like one of those streets down across from Madame Tussauds for the best part of 2.5 years with one of her friends. And I've never been in.
You've never been?
No, I've never been. I've been to the astronomy bit next door.
Right. Well,
I don't know what it's called. Have you never been in there? It's like the constellations and all of that. And you go in and there's a big dome and you get to look at the stars.
Oh, right.
I've been
in
there.
So it's a completely separate attraction you've been to. But you've just been to Baker Street.
They're in the same building, I think.
Yeah, okay. I've been to the Globe opposite as well, but it's not the Man of Two Swords.
All right, fine. Yeah, whatever. Why would I want to go to what? Why would I have been into Madame Tussauds?
I don't know.
On what planet would I have thought that was a good idea? Like, it's like 40 quid to get in.
Yeah, it's the most touristy of tourist traps, but I have to say,
I just thought it was one of those things
I've never climbed Big Ben. Like, you know.
I thought we were living in West London, just eventually you'd have gone there.
Well, no, like, I have things to do on rainy days. I don't just go, which tourist attraction shall I visit today?
Not now as a 31-year-old, but maybe when you were 8, your mum and dad might have gone like, what do we do with little Jack today?
Yeah, and they were like, do you know what really occupy him? Getting to see waxwork models. They were like, let's go to the park and have a kick around.
They were like, look, there's a Serbian second division match here, young Jack. Watch this.
Yeah, I mean, that is a fair point. I mean, there was an Irish pub. I spent my days in the Catholic club playing 25, my granddad.
Oh, I feel like you've been robbed of a childhood not going to Madame Tussauds.
I've gained one. I'm still good at 25.
It's not great, but it's worth a day out. Anyway, yeah. No, Rodrigo Muniz.
We digress.
Doesn't.
Yeah, sorry, that's really taking a twist.
Yeah. Speaking of Rodrigo Muniz, let's go on to this one from Mark Weston. Sammy, Jack and Peter. We'll change it to George for today. After 30 plus years of supporting Fulham and 20 plus years of being a season ticket holder, I've finally done it. Season after season, I buy myself a replica shirt, usually just one a season due to the cost, and never with a name. This season, I went for the pink away kit, but after the 3-0 obliteration of Spurs, I went straight to the club shop website and ordered myself a home shirt with Muniz 19 on the back. I've never bought a shirt with a player name before, but what a story this guy has given us so far. Brought in by Marco, who saw something in him, playing understudy to Mitro, which was always going to be a thankless task, heading to Borough to not even take up a space in their matchday squads, coming back to be a second or maybe third choice, and then set to leave in January only to stay and see his chances decrease further by the arrival of Breuer. From there, legendary. They say story, the style, and most of all, the smile. All would make for such a wonderful Fulham story. When I pull the shirt out in 8 or 9 years' time, either to do the gardening or as I get ready to head to the cottage for the Rodrigo Muniz testimonial, I want to remember this moment in time. The moment when Rodrigo Muniz was the most prolific striker in the Premier League. The moment when Fulham fans spent each week waiting for the bubble to burst, and week after week, Muniz stepped out and continued to do his thing and dance his way into our hearts. Maybe he stays, maybe he goes, but whatever happens, this moment right now is what supporting Fulham is all about. We often talk about cult heroes, and Vinny wrote his name into the history books for his goal against Chelsea, but Muniz is such a great guy, a great story, and appears to just be the nicest, most wholesome handsome and decent human being this club may have ever seen. I hope he becomes one of those players that gets a Fulhamish folklore podcast in the future. I will wear my new shirt with pride, and when people on the streets of Oceanside, California ask me about the club badge, I will explain the magic of Fulham FC, and when they ask me about the name and number, I will recount these few months of Fulham history with the same smile that we see from Rodrigo week after week. And that's from Mark Weston in California.
Unreal.
What an email.
What an email.
That response is great.
I love him. I can't remember the last time I loved a player so much after such a short amount of time. I know he's been at the club for a number of years, but my God, what a guy. Just quickly before we go on, out of interest, if you had to get a player's name on the back of your shirts, who would you go for this season?
I do really like the idea that Fulham have a player who wears Raoul 7 on the back of his shirt. It's one of the most iconic name number combinations in history.
And Fulham on a white shirt as well.
On a white shirt, we have our own Raoul 7. So maybe Raoul. Maybe Raoul. Although I do like Traore's 11.
Yeah.
I think it fits him. It fits him really nicely. And I like the number.
I also thought about Traore 11, just mainly because of the irony of a slow, schlubby nerd such as myself wearing the Armour 11 shirt.
You have to buy it in too small as well.
Yeah. tuck it into my trousers as well. To be fair, oil up.
I was talking to my brother about this at the weekend, and we were talking about it was my cousin's 18th birthday. His name's Finnan. And one of the things I nearly bought and then decided it was too much money for a joke was I nearly bought him a goalkeeper shirt with Finno 18 on the back instead of Leno 17. And my brother was looking at me being like, I was like, I had it in the basket. I was like, I think he will hate this so much that it'd be really funny. And my brother's like, you are an absolute muppet. Like, I can't believe you came so close to actually going through with this. But yeah, there you go. There's a fun.
Do you think the club number, like when you order a Traore 11 shirt, just and you get it in
get
the post? That's
free.
What I meant.
Yeah,
you're missing the trick.
Missing the trick there. Yes. You can have that one for free. Right, this will catch on. Let's do a couple of these. I've got a lot. I'm saving quite a few of them for the live show, but I'll play a few today just to kind of to whet the appetite. So first one is from Lewis Wright. He says, hello, Fulhamish. After listening to the most recent Thursday pod and with Jack saying that we're missing a trick with an Alex Iwobi chant to Mr. Saxo beat, I got my thinking cap on and came up with this. He says, thanks for the pod. I live in Suffolk and not being able to go down to the cottage much, mainly due to the ticket prices. It helps me keep in touch with the club I love. Thanks for all the hard work. So this is Louis's effort.
This goes down the left or in the number 10. He's our super ego in black and white. Alex Iwobi plays with a smile and he has so much style. He's our super ego in black and white. Alex Iwobi.
Yeah, good vibes. Having a good time.
It is kind of vibes, isn't it?
Yeah, nice vibes. Nice vibes. Good stuff. Thanks,
all
mate.
Right. Not bad. At all. Too many syllables. I think it's a tad too wordy for it to catch on, but I do quite.
It's actually quite a hard song to write a chant to.
This is actually the last one for today, but when you realise how long it is, you'll kind of see why.
It's always a good start.
This is from Eddie Kirkland in Atlanta, Georgia. It says, hello, Fulhamish team. This is a submission for This Will Catch On. Forgive me for butchering one of the great songs of all time, but this just encapsulated our season all too well. If we've learnt anything this year, it's that you can't always get what you want. But if you try sometimes, you might find. Hope you enjoy. And since you liked it so much last time, I left a little music bed for you again. Cheers to all of you from a dedicated US listener. Yes, I remember Eddie's last one. So this is from Eddie. And I think you might have guessed what song it is.
A bag of cash in his hand, and I knew he would make this decision and leave us for the Saudi sands. So we went down to the Mexicanos to find us a man. After 5 goals and 10 Rabonas, Old Marco played the ace right up his sleeve. He said you can't always get what you want. No, you can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. But give Marco time and you might find Rodrigo Muniz.
It's so good.
So I went down to the Chelsea chairman to get my roster filled. I was standing in line to see Mr. Bowley. Man, did he look pretty ill. We decided to have us a loaner. £4 million we gotta spend. Oh, Rodrigo, he just smiled and looked at Breuer. He said, you can sit your ass down on the bench. He said, you can't always get what you want. The summer whites, you just might find Rodrigo Muniz.
10 out of 10.
Yeah, it's money, so
money,
good.
Money,
I think this is then the music bed that we're allowed to talk over.
Amazing.
Eddie, it is astonishing. It may be one of the very best.
In the words of Charlie Sloth, I challenge anyone. That is the greatest this will catch on of all time.
That's
the,
a big
the floor is back on. That is the greatest this will catch on of all time.
Also, that chorus could genuinely catch on. Can't always get what you want. Give Marco time, you just might find Rodrigo Muniz. It's perfect.
That's the best of all time. But that, Eddie, honestly, that's it. The bar has been raised yet again.
Yeah,
that's top of the lot. Eddie, I bow down. That was class.
If anyone comes to the Fulhamish live show, tickets still on sale, by the way. Go to the link in the description if you want to get a ticket. We will almost certainly be playing that one in full during the This Will Catch On segment at the end, which is always the best part of every live show. So do come after the Palace game.
I'm sensing a Sammy James go get the guitar moment.
It's definitely a Sammy James go get the PowerPoint presentation to put the lyrics on the screen moment. Don't know about getting the guitar. And that'll do for the pod today. What a way to end it. Jack, thank you very much.
Thank you to Eddie, man.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm a bit speechless. I don't get speeches very often.
George, thank you.
Thank you.
We will be back on Monday. Elizabeth Barner's going to be hosting the pod, which we're really excited about, on Monday, looking back at the West Ham game. And then we will be back this time next week, looking ahead to that big game against Liverpool. Can we be the kingmakers or the king dethroners, potentially, as the title contenders come one by one to the cottage to see if they can get the points that they need? So have a lovely weekend, whatever you're doing. If you're heading to West Ham, enjoy it. It's the best away day in the Premier League, as we clearly determined earlier. If you're not heading to West Ham, have a good weekend anyway. Call on you Whites.
You Whites.
You Whites.